Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio.
This is a show about what matters most in our life, our mind, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. In this show, I will share some insight with you about grief and loss. And then first, I would talk to Dr. Donald Meichenbaum. He's one of the founders of cognitive behavioral therapy and was voted one of the 10 most influential psychotherapists in the 20th century. He is the author of Treating Individuals with Addictive Disorders, a strength-based workbook for clients, patients, and clinicians. I learned so much from him. I've always learned so much, and I hope that you also enjoy our conversation. Then I'll bring you Janet McKee. She's a speaker, best-selling author, high-performance consultant, and the CEO of SanaView. Her new book is Stressless Success. Isn't that what we want? All of us want that, right? Stressless Success, the surprising secrets to a life of passion, purpose, and prosperity. Don't forget to call me or email me and let me know what are some of the topics that you want us to talk about. And also go on my Instagram, Dr. Fujian Zain, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, any of them, and connect with me through that also. I wanted to share with you the tip of the week. This week, I wanted to share with you the emotional process of loss. Many people are experiencing loss this time in their life. Many are grieving for the loss of a loved one due to COVID-19. Others are grieving their job, their career, their businesses, or even their own identity with it. Some are grieving the freedom that they experienced before, and some feel the loss of socialization that appeared effortless. Whoever has lost a mate, separated from one, divorced, or had a death in their family has experienced an extremely painful experience. There's an experience of sadness that takes over and forces one to move inward and pay attention to yourself. For some, the sadness turns into agitation and anger. At times, there's feelings of anxiety about an unknown and unfamiliar and uncertain future without what was there before. There's a natural process of bargaining for bringing back what was lost or the person who no longer is in our life. When the loss is happening, the anger naturally shows up to protect and fight to get back what was supposed to stay. When the anger does not work and we can't have what or whom we lost, a sense of utter powerlessness and hopelessness creeps in. I personally think this is the hardest part of the grief process. When this phase becomes intolerable, usually people go back to bargaining again, but nothing brings back what was gone. It takes another way of thinking and being with the reality of life as is. Acceptance of the loss and what that loss has brought for our life is the path to take. Life changes. Let's look at how the change will make growth possible. Hardship ignites resilience. Life goes on beyond loss. There are other gains that will show up. But first, attend to the grief. Cry as much as you want. Honor your sadness. Allow time to go within you and nurture yourself. Meditate daily, even a couple of times per day. Even journal daily. Write a letter to the person you lost, or even yourself, or the identity that you lost due to all that you've had to give up. Share everything in that letter. Write everything that has not been said, and just let it all out. Assign a time per day that you only attend to your grief. Look at what thought process you've gotten hooked on, and it's not letting you go. Look at all the whys, all the questions that you ask yourself that you can't answer. And maybe you have to ask different questions in order for you to complete with the grief. Begin envisioning a future beyond the time of loss that brings out the best of you. all is well and will be well. We'll be right back with Dr. Donald Meichenbaum.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET 1490 AM.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I am so excited to have Dr. Donald Meichenbaum with me again. I love his work, everything that he's done, and I've learned so much from him, and he always makes me laugh too. He's one of the founders of the cognitive behavioral therapy, and he was voted one of the 10 most influential psychotherapists of the 20th century. He has consulted at addiction treatment centers for 30 years. We will be talking about his latest book, Treating Individuals with Addictive Disorders, a strength-based workbook for patients and clinicians. Welcome to the show.
Why, thank you. I always enjoy my opportunities to interact with you.
So. Thank you. Before we go to this one, I want you to talk about the book you had written before this about resilience, and that it's open for everyone to have an experience of it, learn from it. Could you share a little bit about that?
Sure. I had many years working with individuals who've had trauma histories, both civilians and military. And I put together a handbook called Roadmap to Resilience. And during this pandemic, I had been invited by various medical facilities to try and be of service to the frontline providers. So I ended up putting the Roadmap to Resilience book available online for free, and your viewers can access it. It has a website called Roadmap to Resilience, all connected, .wordpress.com, wordpress.com. And since I put this on the internet for free, it has had 19,000 visitors and is now been clicked on by 113 countries. So I'm very proud. You know, I've just celebrated my 80th birthday.
Wow.
And I'm into what is called the generativity phase of life in giving things away. So I hope this is of value to your listeners.
Absolutely. As I said, I've listened to your workshops, I've had your books, and it's an amazing way of learning from you. Deep material, and you've put it in such a simple term, and wealth of questions that are related, relevant, questions that produce a lot of insight for people and creates also a roadmap exactly of how to create, whether it was the resilient or any of the factors that you were talking about. Today, we're talking about...
You can also go to the Melissa Institute, website.org, and I am the research director of that institute.
Yes, and you've worked so much with the domestic violence and violence itself.
Go on to your topic of the day.
Addiction. Right. I've worked with addiction also about 30 years, and I've always learned from you. One of the conversations, and maybe even a controversial conversation that I still keep hearing, is addiction a disease? Is it a condition? Is it a habit? Is it completely curable, or is it manageable for life? Can you please answer to that?
Well, you've asked several questions. So let me first of all note that especially in this time of the pandemic, okay, the issue of addictive behaviors such as alcoholism or opioid addiction is very timely. I'll get to the specifics of your questions. But given the fact that as a result of the pandemic, we have an increase in violence towards others. For example, in terms of domestic violence with shelter in place, we have an increase in the role of suicides, people dealing with grief and the uncertainty and the stress involved. Each of those particular aftermaths of the pandemic are clearly related to substance abuse. So the people using substances in these days increases the likelihood of all of those problematic behaviors. So one of the things we know is that many individuals who have addiction problems do not seek help. Now, there are a percentage of people who will be able to sort of go cold turkey or over multiple occasions reduce the likelihood of being addicted, okay? But the challenge, and this is what's central to the book, is that no matter what addictive problems individuals have, whether it's alcohol or cocaine or heroin or other forms of addictive behaviors like opioids or even behavioral addictions, in about 75% of the cases, they will have a reoccurrence of this. So the name of the goal is how do you achieve lasting changes? That is, how do you improve the likelihood of people once they want to make a commitment to change to help them on their journey to recovery? Many individuals are able to use the material that's in the book that I wrote, as well as other forms of treatment, and in fact, have a lifetime and journey. In fact, in the book, I encourage people to go to a number of websites whereby individuals who have had addiction problems tell their story of how they tried to recover. And it becomes really interesting whether you think about this as a disease or a behavioral pattern, that clearly there are biological vulnerability factors that contribute to who gets addicted. And in the book, I go through how people get addicted and stay addicted. But there's clear hope that I built into this possibility of recovery. And I encourage the reader to visit some of these websites and spell out what is the nature of the stories that people tell themselves and tell others that lead them to abstinence or at least being a controlled substance user. So perhaps we'll get into some of those specific techniques.
One of the major conversations that happen is many of the people are also getting into drugs or alcohol in a very, very early age. I'm having my clients at even age 11 now. I hear from the parents that they're finding Juul with the nicotine or marijuana, the ones that are coming in a pen.
Vaping and so forth, yeah.
Yes, all of that around age 11, 12, 13. And then somehow they start using it almost daily. And obviously in the teenage years, those are the years that the brain is having the capacity to learn about emotional strength and emotional regulation. And from there on, it kind of gets jolted as if people are no longer having the ability for that. Now, as they go, they go through their addiction, in recovery, one of the biggest hurdle is not having the substance to kind of calm down your emotions, and your emotions are there to express in and for you and other people in such an overwhelming way, which actually creates constant relapse for them. And you have an amazing chapter in your book about how to strengthen the emotional coping mechanism in your system. Can you share a bit about that?
Well, first of all, your observation is very astute. The earlier that someone begins engaging in addictive behavior, the greater the likelihood down the road that they're going to develop long-term kind of addictive behaviors. So insofar as we can influence and change the trajectory of adolescence, especially early adolescence, challenges us and encourages us to try and change that kind of effort. Now people use substances even during adolescence for multiple different reasons. And in the book, I talk about the variety of diverse reasons that people engage in this. Sometimes it's part of the social enterprise. You know, you're part of the group and this is the way you get accepted. Sometimes the way in which people turn to addictions is because they are suffering some kind of emotional distress, either of depression or having been victimized, or anxiety disorders. So for some, it is a form of self-medication. They're trying to solve a problem. As you know, in the handbook, the workbook that I put together, I spell out a variety of different kinds of coping tools that we could help individuals of all ages deal with those dysphoric and challenging emotions. So there's a whole chapter on one of the emotional tools, that is, how do you engage in self-regulation? How do you learn to tolerate distress? How do you soothe yourself? And there are a variety of other toolboxes included in the book as well, including cognitive. What are the nature of what someone has to tell themselves, even though they're engaging in high-risk behavior, to convince themselves and others that it's okay to use it, whether they use denial of this being a problem, whether they're into a kind of needs-based approach that I need this in order to experience excitement, to be free. They may have some kind of anticipation. In fact, anticipating the benefits of taking a drug is mainly a challenging. Keep in mind that the adage is that substance abuse, like alcohol, is 10% drinking and 90% thinking, okay? It's 10% drinking and 90% thinking. In fact, there have been studies whereby they've given people alcohol to drink, but it was not real alcohol. It was just grape juice without the booze. And in these studies, they found out that the expectation, someone telling them that it was booze, was enough to get them high. Okay? So you need to think about addictive behaviors as complex, that there's a physiological component, that there's an emotional component, a cognitive and interpersonal. Given that kind of model, we need to have specific coping tools for each of those domains. And that's what the workbook is all about.
Dr. McKibben, one of the conversations that people have within themselves is not only the denial, but lying. They lie to themselves. You see this type of cognitive distortion that shows up where a part of them is manipulating them and lying to them. This is even without consideration of how much they have to maybe strategize or manipulate the people around them in order to leave them alone or to get what they want from them. But the lying starts inside. The justification starts inside. And those are also the cognitive aspects. And can you talk a little bit about this part of the cognitive distortion and what type of the coping skills can a person have in order to be insightful about when is it that I am actually lying to myself, and that becomes part of the recovery?
It's tricky to, from my perspective, to use the word lying.
Okay.
That attributes a kind of intentionality. You know,
I'm talking unintentional.
Yeah, no, but seriously, no. I mean, you're right on target. I mean, just envision someone who almost died by taking an opioid, right? You know, and if they didn't have Narcan right then, at the moment, they would have gone too far, right? So the question is, how do they convince themselves afterwards, okay, that they can still use substances again, even though they're putting themselves at risk or they see the consequences it has for the various roles, their work, their studies, or the impact on family members. So under those circumstances, people have a variety of thinking processes of how people decide or convince themselves, you know, that in some sense they're not appropriate. So one of the mechanisms that people use, what you call distortions, is they doubt the science. You know, that they have a thinking processes where they doubt that, you know, they've survived in the past, that they don't see the consequences, they've seen other people recover, you know, so they engage in a variety of thinking processes that discount them being at risk. A second major way that people convince themselves to continue on addictive behaviors is they think like an economist. They think of the pros and cons. You know, so many people, for instance, continue using substances because they want to avoid withdrawal symptoms. And the withdrawal symptoms are worse than what they have. Or they feel they would be rejected by their group. Okay. Or they decide in some ways that they will lose something like their creativity or sensitivity and so forth. So the first kind of thinking style, if I can characterize it as such, is they act like a doubting Thomas. They doubt whether they're at risk, they doubt whether the science, and they point to other examples. The second kind of thinking process that people engage in is they act sort of like an economist, if I could use that metaphor. They look at the pros and cons, both social and personal, of engaging in that kind of activity, and therefore, the decision to continue using substances seems to outweigh this. And the third and most challenging kind of thinking style that one has to deal with that leads people to become addicted and to stay addicted is they have certain kinds of beliefs or preferences. They may have a fatalistic outlook, you know, that everyone's going to die some way, and this is, or they may have a sense of depression and helplessness and hopelessness, or they may have beliefs that they don't want anyone to tell them how to live their lives, that they're going to be the boss of. So each of those kinds of domains, whether you're a doubting Thomas, a questioning economist, or someone who has a sense of beliefs, can in fact convince people. You know, remember, each of us, each of your listeners, as well as the two of us, are not only Homo sapiens, but we are Homo narrans. And what's a Homo narran? A Homo narran is a storyteller. And we are all storytellers. And we tell ourselves stories, and we tell other stories. And I highlight in the book that the nature of the stories that people tell themselves and others will determine whether they're in this in the 75% group who will relapse or the group who will begin a journey. But let me say one thing about the concept of relapse, if I may. William Miller and others have highlighted this. If you had any kind of chronic disorder like hypertension, diabetes, and so on, you're going to have other occasions of bouts of this. We don't really call those relapses. What we are when we talk about relapse is we're, and relapse prevention is a key element in treatment, is take a diabetic who, in order to maintain a healthy pattern of behavior, they have to do glucose monitoring, and they have to do exercise, foot care, and so forth. People are non-compliant with those kinds of coping efforts. And as I note in the book, and what therapists who are helpful is they're going to help individuals understand what are the triggers that lead to relapse, whether those triggers are external, social pressure, or whether they're internal, like mood disorders, whether they're external, like a conflict with others, okay, or whether it's a kind of remembrance of some kind of victimization. So if I could help individuals, if your listeners who are having problems with addictions of one sort or another, go to the book, they can start to see the strategies, just like for the diabetic, that we could help them once they make a commitment to start that change process. So
it's getting getting the understanding of what it is that would support them to get the triggers. And when they own and take responsibility for that, I'm hearing that they will start nurturing themselves. They will become responsible for watching and when those triggers would be. There's also a chapter you have, which is, I really love this chapter and I wanted you to share about it, is not only the resilience, but also becoming your own therapist or nurturer or a coach internally, where you have this concept of monitoring, knowing, shifting the narrative that you have inside yourself, the story that you tell yourself, in order to bring your strength and move you forward. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, the whole name of the game, okay, for we as therapists is to put ourselves out of business, right?
Yes.
We want our clients to become their own therapist, okay? In fact, one of my favorite questions to ask my patients is the following. I say to them, do you ever find yourself out there in your day-to-day experience asking yourself the questions we ask each other right here? So the name of the game is I want them to take my voice with them. I want that voice to become their voice so they can notice, they can catch, they could check out their own thinking behaviors. They could start to engage in identifying what are particular high-risk plans. I want them to develop a sobriety script like we have for other scripted behaviors. Not only that, I want them to surround themselves with significant others who can support their journey to recovery. You know, like for people who go to AA, for instance, it's not just the spirituality piece, but it's hanging around with non-drinking buddies afterwards. It's the nature of the change talk that they engage in. And insofar as I can help them engage in that kind of behavior, they become their own therapist. And should they lapse, I want them to view that as a teachable moment rather than as occasion to catastrophize and say, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. If they start that CD in their head, then you're going to have repeated pattern. I want them to have SMART goals, specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. Because having those kinds of goals nurture hope. And hope is a key ingredient for changing any behavior.
Absolutely. Everyone, Dr. Donald, Don Mechenbaum, Treating Individuals with Addictive Disorders, a strength-based workbook for patients and clinicians. And
yeah.
Trust me, yes. And even if you are not a clinician, this book is amazing. It is written simply also for anyone who's not a clinician and they can use it for themselves. If you like to contact Dr. Mechenbaum, melissainstitute.org.
Yes, right.
That's the best part. 1 minute or less, anything we haven't talked about and you really want to share with everyone?
One of the things that's included in the book, in the appendix, is how to choose a residential treatment center. Okay? The problem in the area of addictions, as in many other areas, is that it's often filled with hype, exaggerated claims, and they don't follow gold standards. They don't use evidence-based interventions. So I have included in the book a consumer's guideline. So what I would do is suggest that before anyone pays good money to attend a treatment facility for themselves or their loved one, that you take a look at the consumer's guide so that you can choose the best setting for you and others. There is clearly a way to accomplish a journey of abstinence. I'm glad to have the opportunity and thank you for inviting me here to present.
Oh, it's always a blessing to have you. Thank you so much. Treating Individuals with Addiction, Dr. Donald Mechenbaum. It was a pleasure to have you and don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Thank you. Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it. Are you afraid? Are you getting panic attacks? Are you getting bored and can't stand it anymore at your home? Are you finding yourself in a bind with a relationship at home? Are you wondering what all of the fuss is? And are you determined to guard yourself against all others? Or worried about how am I going to pay my rent or mortgage? In respect to the coronavirus stress, I'm offering a sliding scale online psychotherapy for anyone in California and life coaching to anyone in the world who's suffering financially. Please connect with me at Fujian.com, Foojan.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Janet McKee with me. She's a speaker, best-selling author, high-performance consultant, and the CEO of SanaView. She is one of only 200 elite coaches in the world, certified in high performance by the High Performance Institute, and then inducted as a member of the National Association of Experts, Writers, and Speakers. She's the author of the new book, Stressless Success. Isn't that awesome? Stressless success. Isn't that all every one of us need that, right? The surprising secrets to a life of passion, purpose, and prosperity. She has created the acclaimed Accelerated High Performance Program and the Empower 3 Leadership Plus Lifestyle Retreats to empower others to break negative patterns and achieve greater success. Thank you and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Zain. It's so exciting to be here. I'm honored to be invited onto your show.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you. Your book is emotional, is simple learning, and yet so deep and so true. And it kind of covers a lot of the aspect of the areas of life which people may be taking for granted or they have some negative beliefs on, and how to shift it and how to move forward. So I love to go through some of the areas of your book that I really enjoyed.
Absolutely. Thank you for that lovely description of my book. And I have to say, clearly you've gone through it, and that is exactly the idea. It's simple but powerful.
Yes. You talk about goals and desires and the belief that they make us happy, but the pathway at times makes us miserable. And yes, I've worked with a lot of clients. You know, I'm a therapist. I work with a lot of clients that they have the idea of where they want to get, but through it, they're like, they're pulling themselves up. And whether they do it for their parents or they do it for an idea of a success, but through it all, they're going through a lot of hardship. And you share, which is, shouldn't that be backwards? Like, shouldn't you really enjoy the process as you're going? And when you really love what you do, then not only you feel success, but the success shows up as success. Not that you have the results and the havings, but you don't really feel success because you're miserable. Can you share about that?
That is brilliant. Absolutely. We all make it harder than we have to, because we believe that in order to achieve the next level of success or the next thing you want to accomplish, that we must strive and struggle, right? We hear about grit and working really hard and struggling and climbing the corporate ladder and all of these things. And what I discovered through many years of experience and research is that it's the opposite. And this stuns people. But imagine that when we stress and struggle, we build walls of resistance. And those walls of resistance block solutions, possibilities, and opportunities from flowing to you with ease. Now, I'm not saying you don't take action, but action must come from this expanded and elevated feeling and energy. And when you do that, you achieve greater success, but without getting burned out and exhausted. So it's greater success with ease and flow. And that is the surprising secret. The key is learning how to do it.
I remember I created this amazing agency that I loved. You know, we had over 60 therapists of different culture, multicultural, multilingual, about six different locations in the greater Los Angeles area. And at the beginning, this was my dream. This is exactly what I wanted to do. Something about 15 years later, I dreaded if I had to teach another student that came from the school in how to do therapy, I just was like, oh, can't do it anymore. And I remember at one point I sat down and I said, this whole process is no longer enjoyable, although everybody else thinks it's a beautiful, successful clinic. And I just shut it down. And I'm like, I want to be feeling success, enjoying every minute, and not just even feel stuck to, because one aspect is getting there. Another one is maintaining the success and still feeling joyous about it.
Well, because you did what we just talked about, you climbed through stress and struggle instead of flowing and allowing success to create from you. When you create from joy and passion and excitement, then it just continues to feed you, right? It feeds your soul. It feeds every mind, body, spirit, everything. And when you continue to be nourished by the work that you do and what you create, you just want to do more. And it no longer feels like work. It feels like, you know, fulfilling and deep, passionate living. That is where success actually comes from. So you experienced some level of success from a definition, but you truly weren't living a successful life. And when we looked at the world's most accomplished people in our research, we didn't look at just success in business or money. We noticed that the world's most accomplished were successful in every area of the life because they recognized that their health and well-being was a foundation for having the clarity, energy, and confidence to create more in the world. They recognized that their relationships, their hobbies, their spiritual life. But what we were all taught before is, oh no, you don't have time for those things. You've got to grit and grind to achieve success. And imagine, right, all of that grind and struggle, that's why you end up feeling depleted and exhausted. And you have no idea. And I think you're now discovering that because you hit that wall and you're like, wait a minute, I'm not happy anymore. This isn't fulfilling for me. You then started to look for, right? Well, how can I live differently? And this is interesting because people think when I get the new promotion, when I get the new house or the new relationship, then I'll be happy. So they are unhappy on that journey toward achieving their goal. And that's why it's so difficult. The idea here, and many of you have heard the joys in the journey, but that's like a bunch of, right? Like that's just a bunch of fancy words. Well, think of it like this. A painter has the goal of painting a painting, right? But once that painting's done, it's on the wall, and that's nice. He can look at it for a few seconds every day. But the joy is in the creation. It's choosing the colors and the textures and the lighting, right? That's the joy of it. And when we learn to live our lives that way, right? That's actually the very end of the book is master your masterpiece of your life. When you learn to appreciate and enjoy the rich moments that are there in front of you every single day, your life becomes richer with ease.
So the next chapter says, life is just like sex.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about
that. I went through every line of that chapter to see how is it like sex. So please let us know.
Okay. Only the bravest interviewers ask me about that chapter, by the way. You were clearly a courageous woman, and I respect that. So, yes. And of course, I title that to entice people to open, but let's look at this.
You have enticed me.
Okay. It leads me to my story. So people think, oh, Janet, this is all easy for you because you're successful, you're a world speaker, an author, best-selling author, blah, blah. But no, it wasn't the case for me. I was always a high achiever. But when I was in the corporate world, I worked for two Fortune 500 companies, climbed the corporate ladder faster than any of my peers, and had a really high-level, high-pressure job. But all of that success and pressure and stress took me down. I literally developed an autoimmune disease that completely debilitated me, Dr. Zine. I landed in the hospital. I couldn't eat. I had internal bleeding that wouldn't stop, and I couldn't walk. And prior to this, I was a young, athletic, aggressive career woman. Well, the doctors came to me and said, Janet, you've developed this autoimmune disease. We really don't have hope for you. We can suggest either a medication that causes cancer, or we can start removing your organs. I didn't know anything about natural health and healing, but something came over me, a power greater than me, or a power within me, truly, that said no. I got myself out of the hospital. I remember I couldn't even walk up and down the steps of my own home. And I began the journey of learning how to heal my body naturally. And I did. From that, I became inspired to help others. So I left the corporate world and went to Columbia University to study holistic health and wellness. And it's interesting because if it wasn't for my health challenge, almost dying in the hospital, I never would be as healthy as I am today. I mean, I'm upper middle age and I have no illness whatsoever, no medication whatsoever. And the doctors 2 decades ago told me it was impossible. So from that, it led me to help other people, right? Achieve greater levels of mind and body health and well-being, mostly through food and lifestyle. From that, though, I was having success, but then I hit the next walls of my life. When my husband of 26 years walked out on me and our son in an hour's notice, left me not only heartbroken and our family ripped apart, but left me at the brink of financial disaster. Because not long before he left, he had put liens on all of these investment properties that I developed with money I made in the corporate world for financial stability for our family. He put liens to buy a business that the time he left was failing. So I found myself at a point where not only was I heartbroken, but I felt like I was standing on thin ice and the roof above my head was a house of cards because he also put a lien on the home where we lived. I tell you, Fujian, I didn't even know how I was going to support a home for me and our son. And I was scared. I was depressed. I was anxious. I was fearful. I mean, you name it. I was in very low level thinking, I call it. It's low feelings, low vibration energy. I realized one day I used to be a happy, vibrant, successful woman. I had to refine myself. So I went out around the world figuratively and literally and studied with world masters in success, achievement, abundance, high performance, positivity, right? And each thing helped me a little bit, but I kept finding myself stuck in the same old place. It wasn't till I made the discovery that we're going to discuss here today that changed everything for me. And that's when I started to get invited to Hollywood to be interviewed by Jack Canfield, a multi-million best-selling author. I got invited to contribute a chapter to a book with Brian Tracy, who's a legend in business and success and so forth. And that's when I realized I was at Hollywood being interviewed and that Jack Canfield kept calling me success expert, but the video crew thought he was calling me a sex expert. And that's a story for another time. But I realized that I heard a quote from a famous, now deceased, but a famous sex expert, Psalm Isadora. And she said that you must have friction to experience climax. And this, I believe, is one of the basis of life. If it wasn't for almost dying in the hospital, I would never be as healthy as I am today and would have never helped so many people with their health. If it wasn't for my husband leaving me at the brink of financial disaster and heartbroken, would I have ever gone out around the world to discover what I'm sharing today, and which is incredible. And that's completely changed my life and the lives of so many others. So that's what it is. The friction of life helps us achieve, right, the climax of our lives. And so that's why life is like sex.
Absolutely. You say this beautiful sentence, which is so true, because I, you know, work with many, many, many people for 30 years of working with their past and how their past consistently sabotages it and what it takes to create that type of a healing. You say when you make peace with your past, you can actually change your past. And that's so true, that when you haven't completed with it, it just keeps showing up for you. And then it takes away from that joy, from that essence, the zest, the liveliness that you actually need to experience in life to gain success, but also enjoy your success and call it a success even.
Absolutely. So many people believe they're victims, yeah. Right? They're like, well, it was my upbringing, or it was my teachers, or I was abused, or it was my spouse, or it's the economy or the government, or right now the pandemic, right? Like, people just want to give their power away and say that they're victims. And most of it does come from our past. Like, I could have said I'm a victim of what my husband did, but now I'm grateful. I'm grateful that he did that, because it made me so much stronger and so much wiser. So when we're able to look at these experiences in our lives, and most of them from our past, from our distant past, from our recent past, and stop being a victim and giving your power away, it's time to take your power back, which is right in the palm of your hands. And you say, okay, wait a minute, that experience made me who I am today, and I'm smarter, stronger, wiser. I'm a richer person because of what happened with that person or that experience. So I am now grateful that I had that experience from my past. When you can see that also people, you know, they're doing the best they can with what they knew at that time in their lives. Can you have compassion for someone that you feel hurt you in the past? Change the way you view at the past, change the way you feel about it. And when you do, you're taking back your power. You're changing the way you feel about your past, which changes every cell of your body. And that shifts your energy. When you shift your energy from victimhood to expansion and compassion and freedom and forgiveness, then look at what you've done. You've opened up and expanded. Now good things can flow to you. And then you become more and more grateful over what you've experienced in your past because of where it led you right here to this very day to listen to this conversation that can completely change your life. Now you can look at your past and say, wow, it is fabulous. Fabulous. We all go through challenges, but they are glorious. You know, think about it. Somebody can look at the word challenge and say, oh, challenge, that is so difficult. It's so horrible. It's so awful. The most successful people say, oh, a challenge. Let me roll up my sleeves. What am I going to uncover? How's this challenge going to help me and teach me and help me grow, right? See how the two ways of looking at a challenge feel differently? And that is the secret. When you pay attention to how your thoughts make you feel, it's not actually about what goes on up here. You can't control your mind. You can't control all of your thoughts. People say, oh, you just need to think positively. Well, I discovered that, yes, that's great when everything's going well and you create this positive momentum. But when you're facing a really difficult challenge that you're upset about, if you even try to think positively, every thought has two sides of the coin. And so the more you try to force a positive thought about something you're upset about, you're putting more upset into your energy field, more fear, more frustration, more guilt, anger, shame, whatever that is. So stop trying to think positive thoughts about things you're upset about. Instead, get out of your head and into your energy. And that's an entire section of Stressless Success. When you just learn to do things, anything that helps you to feel better, then just expand and uplift, allow. That's the key, because then things are gonna flow to you like you never imagined. Right now, today, I'm at my historic landmark organic farm in the Laurel Mountains of Pennsylvania. Normally I do these interviews from my home office in Pittsburgh, but we're doing a farm to table dinner today at our farm because we want to share the idea of people getting back to Mother Nature, appreciating the beauty of what's around you. Because when you do, you get negative ions from Mother Nature, which is a positive thing, and it just uplifts your energy. And little things start to flow that you never could have even thought of with hours of concentrated thinking. And that happened at our farm. We were losing money trying to grow organic produce, and I didn't know what we were going to do. And I just started working on my energy, working on my energy. Guess what happened? A young man came and said, "Janet, we love your farm. We'd like to get married there." And I said, "You want to get married at my farm?" Well, guess what? We had a glorious wedding celebration and word of mouth got out. Guess now who? What's the most popular wedding venue in the Laurel Mountains of Pennsylvania? Sonneview Farms. And guess what? That's supporting our farm financially more than produce ever could have. Did what I've thought of that? Many people say, "Sure, you should have thought that. I didn't know anything about that." It happened for me. You see that, Fujian? It happened for me because I shifted me. I didn't stress and struggle. I just said, "Okay, Mother Nature, show me the way." And she did. That is what I'm talking about when I say stressless success.
I read this in your book, "Feel truly wealthy and fulfilled today. Your tomorrow becomes a source of financial, emotional, and spiritual wealth quickly and more easily and in a way that exceeds all of your expectations. By choosing to struggle less, you create more for your life." And this is exactly what you are sharing right now. You said, "Feed your soul by bringing passion, excellence, and enthusiasm into everything that you do." And I truly believe that after experiencing what I said to you, and I decided not to have that, I really sat there and like, what is it that makes me fulfilled? Like, it's just that you don't have to pay me. I enjoy it anyway. Like, I'll do it anyway because I like getting paid, but it's just something that I'll do naturally. And it was one-on-one therapy again. Like, I would go back to everything that I have ever known, even since childhood, is just sitting with someone and enjoying our conversation and learning about them and sharing ourselves together and sharing that energy. And that's what I did. And then the other side of it was, you know, just learning. And I created these shows in order to learn, because when we have dialogue with each other, not only that I learn and I get excited about it, but I know that everyone learns. And this is what, to me, then the concept of the joy of success is, which just expands on every level. So it is so important to, like you said, look at your own heart, look at the energy that is inside. And it calls you forward to create something that is part of you, that is part of the natural essence of you. The Mother Nature has, you know, signatured you with and brought you here to enjoy whatever it is and then bring it into the action and actualize it. I want to go over the goal setting part with you, or with our audience, actually. You wrote it, so it's not going with you, but with our audience.
If you don't mind me interrupting, you just said so many beautiful things. I just want to say, and let me say, when you do what you just described, right, you come from that energy of positivity and giving to the world, money flows easier. It becomes you, like, you will see money just happens. You don't have to worry about it anymore. When you worry about money, that's walls of resistance and you block it from flowing. So it doesn't have to, you don't have to struggle anymore. So what you just said is brilliant. You don't have to worry about money, but money then flows when you do this. But yes, goal setting is really important. Did you want to ask something specific, or do you want me to go into that?
If you can go through it really quick, because our time is coming up, and I thought this was written down so beautifully that I really wanted you to share some of the like specific type of the goal setting, and then just what is it that we haven't shared that you really want people to know before we end.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've all taken goal setting workshops, right? All of us. I was in the corporate world. They put me through a million of them. Well, guess what? Nowhere will you ever hear what I'm about to share with you, which is the missing piece, which is why 96% of people do not achieve their goals every year, because they're missing this very important piece. So think about it. We normally, from our heads, right, we write down our goals, and that is important to be clear on what you want and write them down. But you don't want to say, "I want." If you say, "I want the promotion," you're coming from a place of lack, and that feels uncomfortable. So you are going to achieve your goal of always wanting, but you're not going to get the promotion because you're always going to be wanting to have the promotion, just for example, right? Instead, you write them in the present tense, and some of you have heard this before, as if it's already achieved. Like, I am so excited about working toward getting that promotion to vice president or whatever, okay? Or to become thinner or healthier or bring the love in my life. I am thinner, I am healthier, but it has to feel good. But here's the idea. You write the goals in the present tense as if they're already achieved, and we've heard, some of us have heard that before. But then I want you to write down or think about why you want that goal, and you're gonna get to a feeling place. Like somebody wants a new home. Why? Because they want more space for their family and live in a safer neighborhood. Why? Because they want to feel safer and more comfortable. So then what you write down instead is the feeling place. I want to feel more comfortable. I'm going to feel safer. I'm going to feel more abundant. I'm going to feel proud of my elevated position at work. I want to feel the freedom of financial abundance. I want to feel this deep love and fulfilling love in my life. You stay at the feeling place. Because it's the feeling place that creates you imagine what it feels like to have already achieved that goal. And what you're doing is you're shifting your energy. And it's your energy, not your mind. It's your energy that you give off that allows your creation to happen with ease. Nobody has ever taught that in a goal setting workshop that I have ever found around the world, is you need to focus on the feeling. And when you spend time at that feeling list, things happen that you could have never thought of. You could have never thought of how you're going to be thinner, how you're going to be healthier, how you're going to make more money or achieve the bigger home or the new relationship. Things that could have never come from your mind will appear for you that will help you get to that feeling place easier.
Beautiful. Janet McKee, everyone. Stressless success, the surprising secrets to a life of passion, purpose, and prosperity. You can find her at janetmckee.com. Thank you so much for spending the time from your farmhouse to be with me and everyone who's with us.
Thank you so much, Fujian. I'm honored to be here. Thank you. It helps me share the ideas with the world. You're doing great work. Please keep it up. You are brilliant.
Thank you so much. It was beautiful to read your book. Everyone, you've got to get this book. For all of you who are out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.